of the chairperson. Signing to attend the meeting and according to Rule 92 of the rules of the NCFP. If the chairperson is unable to attend or perform his or her function, a permanent member from the committee must be elected as acting chairperson. So now I'm going to take nominations. Ms. Mazibuko?
Yes. Thank you very much. Are you chairperson? Program director. And my name is Faith Mazibuko from the Gauteng province. I hereby nominate member Tolo to be our acting chair for today.
Tolo, do you accept the nomination?
Second.
Look for second after.
Close. My apologies. Any seconders?
Second.
Matlala Makubani. Mr. Tolo, do you accept the nomination? Always. Are there any further nominations? None?
No.
Mr. Tolo, acting chairperson for the Select Committee on Social Services. Thank you.
Well, honourable member, good morning. And I also want to say good morning to the officials of the Department of Affairs. And I think I don't know if you from the health, or other things are religious, but those are the accepted people. And all other visitors that are here, including you, Mukesh, not a visitor, but including you. So, with powers vested in me, I want to take this opportunity to once again welcome you all to this our meeting. And say that members have been called from their constituencies. You know that the election campaign is reaching its peak. And they have had to come here to do this that we are supposed to be doing this morning. Two issues on the agenda, which we'll deal with now. And we want to actually deal with these things as quick as possible because we are campaign as well. The politician will go back and campaign. I'm told that there are two items on the agenda. The first item is South Africa Lesotho Agreement, which we need to deal with. Well, I'm not sure how expedient it is to deal with this, because I'm told that this agreement is going to be passed by both houses, National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. But it does look like the National Assembly will not have another meeting before the election. And therefore, if we pass it here now, or there's a committee, we deal with it, we pass it, go to the House, it is passed, that might actually, in the final analysis, I'm not saying you must be jittery about it, but in the final analysis, the wheel might be reinvented. Because if the National Assembly shall not have passed it at the end of the term of this parliament, then it means must restart the process in the new parliament. But be it as it may, we are here, we have deal with it, we do our work as NCOP, and if the other house does not sit, it's not our baby, but we must be wary of the fact that this process and the official that are here might have to come back again somewhere in May, June, or whatever time to redo this whole thing. I was just warning that there is that possibility. Yes, madam?
Yeah. Chairperson, the NA will be having their plenary on the 24th, so they can still meet the deadline of ratifying the agreement. But we can't determine for them. It will be up to the committee section to prepare that, even the NA side, they also prepare for this. But Lilo Anga Chairperson, I'm saying there's no need to panic, as you rightly put it, because they're still going to have their plenary on the 24th. Anything can go onto their agenda.
I agree with you. There's a possibility that the committee responsible for this might actually meet even before the plenary. We don't know, you know. But for now, there's nothing on the agenda that we know of. And I'm saying, be it as it may, let us do that which we're supposed to be doing ourselves, you know, deal with this argument. Now, without much ado, are there other apologies other than that of the chairperson? We have not received any other apology. Okay. And how many provinces are here, if it's the one in front of the member?
Three.
You count me?
Four.
So if we can we pass? Can we hold on? Five provinces can, right? Yeah. Oh, thank you very much.
Three,
four. Okay.
Four.
No, five can.
One, two, three, four, five. Kani.
If we have five provinces, we can pass. Yeah? But it was not counting twice, you know?
No.
It does not problem.
You can
count twice.
No. There are two votes. No. All provinces are equal. Okay. If we have five, then I think we can be able to go through this piece of argument in front of us. Now, without much ado, then, I'm going to ask the department to actually take us through this agreement. What is the rationale behind the department saying we need to go through this and pass it as a parliament? Department, I don't know who is responsible. Maybe you must introduce yourself and the delegation members. I hope members are known to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. My name is Jackson McKay. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for Immigration at the Department of Home Affairs. I have with me Marie Hreilen, who is the Acting Chief Director for Ports of Entry. Gloria Modirua, she is from our Legal Department. And we have Clifford Mokhatjani from our Government Relations with us in the delegation, Chairperson. Chairperson, this agreement between the South African government and Lesotho seeks to facilitate the cross-border movement of citizens between the two countries by simplifying the mutual travel procedures of citizens of both countries, as well as to deliver on improved services regarding the immigration clearance of the citizens who routinely cross the common border. This agreement, the Chairperson, is aimed at permitting citizens of both countries to enter into and certain in the territories of the countries of the parties for the purposes of holiday, business and transit without visas and or temporary residence permits. Chairperson, I will ask Marie Hreilen, who has dealt with this with the Lesotho government, to do the presentation as you had requested in terms of the rationale behind it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we can move to the purpose. Yes, the purpose of this presentation is to request the Select Committee on Social Services to please support the ratification of the RSA-Lesotho Agreement on the facilitation of movement of citizens. The background of this agreement stems from the JBCC agreement, that is the agreement establishing the RSA-Lesotho Joint Commission for Cooperation, which was established to assist Lesotho to graduate from its least developed status to that of a developing country. Now, Lesotho is landlocked by South Africa, and South Africa is its only neighbor. This unique situation calls for a special approach. Lesotho is, in fact, the only country in the world that is completely surrounded by another single country. So the facilitation of movement and economic development are the cornerstones of the SA-Lesotho JBCC agreement. And this agreement stems from the JBCC agreement. A large percentage of Lesotho's gross domestic product is derived from migrant workers in South Africa. And foreigners can only enter Lesotho via the RSA, which also creates a unique situation in border control in the world. Now, the current situation, or the way that we are managing the flow of people between the two countries, has compelled us to look at alternatives. The number of routine travelers per day is simply unmanageable. It's up to 28,000 if you look at all the ports of entry along the border. The effectiveness of this routine processing is questionable. Also, the porous borderline encourages bypassing of controls, with the result that people just bypass the ports of entry. Another consideration is that the compliant travelers are being disadvantaged by long queues and lengthy administrative processes at the border post. We therefore looked at three options, the first one being maintenance of the status quo, which us and Lesotho felt was undesirable. The second one would be to increase our resources on both sides of the border to effectively be able to manage the peaks in traffic flow. However, that would result in an underutilization during the trough or the low traffic period. The third option would be to stop processing routine commuters and focus on monitoring of compliance of visitors. The objective of this agreement then focuses on option three, which is to facilitate the movement of citizens of South Africa and Lesotho, to reduce immigration formality of the citizens of South Africa and Lesotho visiting the territory of the other state, to focus our efforts on inspections or law enforcement, to free resources and use them more effectively, and in so doing to reduce opportunities for corruption at the SAPS and Home Affairs border official offices. Now, the history of this agreement is that it first served before Cabinet in 2005. Cabinet resolved that the matter be referred back to the JDCC for consideration of the implications thereof for Lesotho and South Africa, and finally to the JCPS. The JDCC considered the implications and found that the agreement would be advantageous to the RSA and to Lesotho. The agreement was signed on the 19th of June 2007. The advantages would be the creation of fast lanes for South Africa and Lesotho citizens at the 14 land border posts, reduction of congestion at the border posts, shift the focus from the current routine checks at ports of entry to problem cases in our territory, and the economic advantages of freer movement. The scope of the agreement is the 14 land border posts. It only applies to citizens of South Africa and Lesotho holding valid national passports and only in respect of visitors and permit holders. What do you mean by permit holders? Those are people allowed to work or study in the territory of the other state. And then it would apply to contract workers. They would only need to activate their permits on arrival, and then on departure they would not need to report. The mechanisms that we propose to use when this agreement is activated is to broaden the current visa exemption from a 30-day period to an undetermined period, to exempt Lesotho nationals from the requirement to be in possession of a visitor's permit, and to exempt them as a category, not to have to report to immigration when entering and leaving South Africa. The procedures that we are proposing is for visitors to produce their passports at the Forum as a guide and not as the counter to verify the validity and authenticity thereof. There would be no endorsement of passports by an immigration officer, and individual movements would not be captured by an immigration officer. And permit holders would not need to report to immigration on arrival and departure. The unaffected category would be third country nationals, irrespective of their status in South Africa or Lesotho. Visitors using the airports in those countries, and people wishing to cross the border legally at places other than the 14 ports of entry. Now, the risk factors that have been identified in association with this agreement is the possibility of document fraud. In other words, persons obtaining South African and Lesotho passports who are not entitled thereto, and then undesirable and prohibited persons, and they are excluded from this agreement. The ways in which the risks would be mitigated would be to shift the focus to the inspectorate, to have improved cooperation and exchange of information at all levels between the two states, the continued enforcement of both countries' anti-corruption strategies, and then the development of an implementation framework which would cover an airports project where we would look at airports separately and the security, to intensify our focus on the borderline, that is the stretch of border in between the ports of entry, to improve the security of our enabling documents, and improved consular cooperation. The way forward with regard to the matter is the ratification of the agreement, the legislative enablement, those are the exemptions required, and the amendment of the Act, compliance with the implementation framework, the rollout of the communication strategy, and the entry into force. Thank you, Chairperson. That is what we have to present.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Short and sweet, so to say. Honourable members will also be short and sweet in their questions, and the answers will also follow through. Honourable members, questions of clarity? Questions of clarity? Or queries? Whatever. Mm. Mula.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you for the presentation. My main worry and my main concern is document fraud. My main concern is document fraud. I am pleased to see that the department tends to stamp out corruption, but my main worry is document fraud, especially with about plus minus 28,000 people entering on a daily basis. That is a huge amount. And our affairs must admit that at this point in time, they also have problems in just maintaining law and order in their department. So how will that be prevented? Thank you. And control.
Thank you, Chairperson, and let's welcome the presentation. Chairperson, I've got quite a lot of, in fact, let me say nightmare. Because one, Chairperson, we all know the Department of Home Affairs is not coping. They are not coping at all. In fact, it's no longer a Department of Home Affairs. It's a horror office. Things that happened there, Chairperson, really.
You
read the newspaper. I do read Daily Sun.
I can see you read Daily Sun.
Chairperson, really. I mean, if the department says, for example, on that slide, it will be on my page 6, that the visitors will produce passports at perimeter gate to verify validity and authenticity. already you can see a nightmare. A person will simply stand there and flash a passport and they will say, go in. They won't even check, is it a valid passport? Does it have, what you call your watermark within your passport? I don't mean like as in Vatel, but there are these hidden things that you have to check against the machine to be sure that they are real documents, Jefferson. The minute a person flashes a passport there, they will simply say, go in, without even verifying. Already I can see nightmares, Jefferson. These things that are happening. Already we've got quite a lot of people that are coming in and out of South Africa from Lesotho. And quite a lot of time, Jefferson. They go through there, the passport is stamped, go in, anything is happening there. And over and above, my worry again, Jefferson, is that, you know, my constituency is in Orange Farm. It's almost on the border before you get into Free State, and they use Free State. I usually say they come walking onto the mountains of Maluti. Some of them, they even bypass the very same border post where, as it is indicated in the document, Jefferson. And they come here in South Africa over and above. They want our child grants. They want our pension grant. They want everything. How I know that? That's why I told you that my constituency is Orange Farm. I'm familiar with these cases. They even go to the extent of going to buy IDs that will say they are South African citizens. Others, their funny surnames, Mazomba. But when you listen to a person talking, he speaks fluent Sotho that comes from Lesotho. I don't think there's a person with the surname of Mazomba who will actually come in from Lesotho. One lady even goes to the extent of buying an ID for her mother with the surname of Shabala. And I say, there's no way in hell in Lesotho where you will find a Shabala. Of course, you are in Kwaka, you can come across a Shabala. So you see that the person, as much as we say we are opening access for citizens to come in and out, of course, we are in one world. And Lesotho, you see their problem is getting independence in those many years ago. They killed themselves by doing that. They could have remained in South Africa. They could have been part of Union of South Africa. They wouldn't be experiencing all this. It's just that they wanted independence. When they say it in Xhosa or Zulu. And now there's Melekete now is backfiring on them now. It's true, Jefferson, majority of them are working in our mines. They are working. In actual fact, you go to Soweto, majority of domestic workers actually come from the Zulu. Majority of them are undocumented. They work in those houses. And even the laws that were put in place that ensures who the domestic workers are actually registered, they know that they can't register them because they know that they don't have documents, these people. So in other ways, they are abusing them by making them to work like Makisine and not necessarily paying them proper. One granny, Jefferson, I'm sorry to go a long story. This woman from Porky is almost next to Enagi. They came to the office pleading. This woman came in here as a baby, una pepue at the back of her mother, and the mother was working in plot there in Plafondin. And she does not have documents, she has nothing. You can see it's a very old woman. And we felt pity. We even went to an extent of, through our your commissioner of old stamps and anything, recommended to Home Affairs that they should actually assist that woman. And when she got to Home Affairs, that woman was arrested. And now here we are now fighting with Home Affairs officials. Why are you arresting this woman when she arrived in South Africa, a baby, at the back of her mother, blah, 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 blah. They say, hey, come here, let's show you something. When she was in prison, they said to her, where's your passport? She said, no, I don't have a passport. They say, okay, you're going to Lindela. When they said you're going to Lindela, she quickly phoned somebody in Porky. Please go to my shack there, open, where, you'll find my passport there. That passport was brought to Home Affairs. It was stamped. This woman has been going in and out through the border, and yet she wants an ID. It is not even proof that she has been. Usually there are processes. You apply for citizenship, you get a temporary citizenship, then at 10 years you are naturalized. She does not even qualify for none of those. So that shows that she just wanted our ID because they want to end a better life here in South Africa. So now I'm going to tell you, some of these things, as much as we want to assist citizens to be able to come in and out, But they also create a nightmare for us. You know the xenophobic attack last year. They say it's because of South Africa we've allowed, because especially the ANC, who have allowed quite a lot of people to come in and out of South Africa. That is why they are taking their jobs, they are doing whatever, and it creates a problem. So Tina want to assist Jefferson, but our problem is that. But then my question, Jefferson, I've already said what I wanted to say. That page 2, Jefferson, where they say service delivery consideration, compliant traveler, and they say they will sort out administration. If they can clarify us, how are they actually going to sort out that administration, Jefferson? Number 2, on page 3, they're talking about options there. That options 1, they say maintain status quo, increase resources, stop processing routine commuters. If that can also be clarified, Jefferson, to say, what is this status quo that is there, which they say is undesirable? But where do they get to decide what this is undesirable? It's us who pass budget. We know how our resources are strained in this country, Jefferson. And then the other question, Jefferson, there on page 5 of what I'm having here, it's calling, talking about advantages, creation of fast lanes. If they can clarify what are those fast lanes, Jefferson. I've spoken about that one of people just producing an ID without even, passport without even checking the watermark and all those. If we can actually get clarity on that, Jefferson, because really, I don't think we'll be doing justice to South African citizens. In a short, others, they even come here just to get married, you know. The other time I was fighting with my sister, she got married to this little guy. I said he only wants an ID. And I told her straight in the eyes. And 2 months later, he has changed. He now drives a Hummer, a what, and my sister has to come and live with me now. He took the house, he took everything that belonged to her. Usa Fele, Nagasena, next chapter. Thank you, Ron.
Maybe we should take all the questions. Maybe we should take all the questions.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, I'm partly covered by member Mazibobo, but now I'm concerned when they are saying that one of the objectives is to get free resources and use them more effectively. You know, in South Africa, we are so densely populated. The population is so high in so much that our resources, we're having scarce resources now. If they are saying that people from the city can access their resources and get them more effectively, and yet when we do budget here, we're not budgeting for them, we're budgeting for our population. How is that going to happen? Number 2, they're saying that one of the objectives is to reduce the opportunities for corruption. In which way? Because to me, it's an opposite thing, because how can you reduce opportunities for corruption? Because to me, it seems you're going to create more corruption, as Faith was just saying now. And again, Faith again asked the question about this fast lane border post. It said 14 land border posts. How are they going to be installed? Is the department going to make sure that those lanes are specifically for these people and nobody else? How are they going to do that? If they can elaborate more to us. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Before the answer, I don't see any other help. You know, in my other life, I stayed with, I lived with some members of the Communist Party of Lesotho. Their view was that if the Communist Party of Lesotho comes into power in Lesotho, they'll just collapse the bottom. Then they become part of the capital of South Africa. That's what policy document of the Communist Party of Lesotho. This country is not one country. I think honorable members are concerned. They put their finger in the pie when they actually raise the whole question of the problem that they have with Home Affairs, you know? And that this might have good intentions to facilitate this movement and the like. But this might actually magnify the corruption that is there. That's, I think, where the problem is. You are saying, for instance, you must shift the focus from current routine checks at port of entry. There were lots of programs there, you know. Even this very checking of passports there had lots of programs that they indicate. Now if you are going to actually not even check at the port of entry and check somewhere in the perimeter office, corruption will even be worse. Unless you tell us, the Department of Home Affairs, that you have now turned the corner in relation to corruption. That we have now turned the corner in relation to how you are doing your things, you are working as well. Do you think this thing will not even bring us more problems with the problems that you have?
Yeah.
You see, if you are a department that is cleaner, not 100%, but cleaner, this would be a very good piece of management. But with the problems that you have, I will not bring more problems to the country if we relax some of these things with those all those programs of practice corruption. I think these are the only concerns that we have, you know. If you just, I mean, allay our fears in relation to those, we will, I think, concede. Thank you.
Only a very short one. Honourable Chair, you know, I must really say this. I was actually attacked when I spoke on migration only into provinces in the NCC. And I was concerned about the impact that migration has on the budgets of provinces, especially on healthcare, on education, and on pensions. I remember that very well. And you know, I was attacked by our Minister of Social Development, and he said, do you want to bring back Domfather? And at that point in time, I was only concerned about the well-being of our citizens in our country. And it surprises me, it really surprises me, that this bill comes in front. I'm not against people entering our country. We all want that, because we also want to move around into other countries. But I would like to know what brought about this mind change of the department, knowing that at this very point in time that we on this piece of legislation, they know that they are battling to just rectify the issues that we are battling with in our country. Thank you.
Home Affairs, I think we must not be construed to be saying we are totally against this argument. We're just concerned about the problems that are there, practical problems that are there in the Department of Home Affairs. Can you allay our fears?
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps in our presentation we haven't elaborated enough on the how, and perhaps we were too brief, and it's too summarized, and maybe we should have unpacked the implementation part a bit more. When one reads the agreement, it talks about the implementation thereof being dependent on the development of an implementation framework. Now, South Africa and Lesotho have made some progress in the development of that implementation framework. It is the Home Affairs departments of the two countries, together with the other security departments. From South Africa's side, it is the BCOCC, the Border Control Operational Coordinating Committee, who participates in that. In view of the fact that there is a shared responsibility for border control and security in South Africa, it's not purely a Home Affairs responsibility. It is a cluster responsibility of the JCPS cluster department. One of the, or at least some of the specifics that we have also unpacked in the implementation framework is exactly the issue of the improvement of security of enabling documents. In our last meeting last month with our Lesotho counterparts, we have been informed that Lesotho is planning on implementing a national identity, let me just see what they call it, national identity system for its citizens based on biometrics, in other words, fingerprints like our own. That would go hand in hand with the securing of their travel documents. They are being assisted in the center by the United States and the United Kingdom. They are also receiving funds from the World Bank in order to improve their identification in their country. From South Africa's side, that would be an absolute prerequisite before we would even think of implementing the agreement, is to make sure that that security of enabling document is in place. From our side, what we are looking at is at the perimeter gate, to implement biometric recognition systems so that we would not be able to corrupt that system, because it would be totally automated. Those are some of the issues that we are working on in the background in the implementation framework, which have not been captured in detail in our presentation. So the issue of freeing resources and using them more effectively, maybe that also didn't come out very clear. The resources that we are talking about is the human resources of the JCPS cluster department, where we currently just processing people in and out of the country. We could use those same people much more effectively. If we have automated controls, we can use the people that we have to do profiling to see what categories of travelers are a threat and to focus on those travelers instead of routinely stamping people's passports in and out of country. That is what we mean by freeing resources. The department not coping, I think we've said that once again for this coming financial year. The Department of Home Affairs has not received funding from Treasury to fill our vacancies. We only received funding at the ports of entry to pay existing people. We are hugely understaffed at our ports of entry. We have to think of ways to work smarter and with less people, and also in so doing to reduce the risk of corruption. Person, I think that more or less contextualizes what we are doing with regards to mitigating the risk. I don't know if there are issues that we have not addressed.
Thank you very much. Maybe some of our colleagues would want to add, and at this juncture, I would allow them to do so if they want to. Is there any person who wants to add from the Department of Home Affairs? Nobody. Oh, you want to come up?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I thought I would just accentuate the fact that our border control, all of this will be done within the broader strategy of the DCOCC concept paper in terms of securing our borders. In terms of it not being a Home Affairs responsibility only, but a cluster one. And it is in within that context, Chairperson. I think also we are moving as the Department of Home Affairs, we are moving steadily towards an e-border concept, Chairperson, which is more electronic checking of documents, which would allow people to check for the authenticity of documents electronically and allow people to move across the borders in a much more managed way, Chairperson. And it is within those contexts that we will be implementing this this agreement with Lesotho. Chairperson, the other advantage that this will have, Chairperson, is it will stop people from using other gates to get into the country and actually encourage them to use our 14 border points where crossing is allowed legally, and not to go through the fences or swim over a river. Thank you.
Thank you very much. want to come in.
It did not answer the fast lane.
Fast lane thing.
Yes. You see, we drive on a freeway, you know, so we think it's this other lane. That is very, very fast. So you drive
it. Right, then you just flush the passport and pass. I'm going to flush the passport. No, no, I think it's real. Don't you have been checked in the perimeter office elsewhere?
Yes.
When you come there, you don't flush it. I don't know, but this is what happened to
me. Chairperson,
the fast lanes is what we are referring to as the automated gates, where we would have electronic checking of people's fingerprints against their passport.
I thought somewhere you were saying that there is no checking of passports at the border gate. Somewhere you're saying that. Now you're saying that where you electronically checking, I come a little bit.
Chairperson, what we said is that the immigration officer would not perform the check at the immigration office. It would be a check at the perimeter gate, an automated check.
Chairperson, yeah, it does, but let's say Chairperson is a member of the committee. We are unhappy about that. Because they actually even said they are talking about strategies. We don't know our strategy now. What is the implementation? And to what extent are they actually going to be able even to monitor this? You know, sometimes technology is so advanced, people know how to, what do they call this technology? They hack into technology. They will hack into technology. A person will just swipe the passport and not even pick up that there's something wrong with that passport. What other monetary mechanisms are they actually going to put in place to ensure that even if, you know, people are so clever, even, you know, I'm actually thinking, Jefferson, that as much as we say we want to free up the future people, but there will be other people who will also be using that very same system. They will know that if you come in as a suit, they're not checked. There are these other things. People are always looking for ways to bypass the system. So to what extent are they actually going to manage to monitor that? Even technology not being disturbed, and we know that even unless I usually come in from the side of the state, there are mountains there. So in a mountain, anything is possible, you know. There is wind, there is snow, it disturbs power lines, it does everything. So you find people actually are going to be stranded because that machine is not picking up their particulars and even not even digging them up to their fingerprints. So what other ways are they trying to put in place to ensure that they monitor all those systems? And they did not answer on this one of the three options. They did not talk on those ones. There are three options that they put there if they can unpack on them.
Okay.
Okay.
If we can just look at the previous slide prior to that one. The three options, what we are saying is to maintain the status quo. Status quo, Chairperson, being the fact that we are understaffed and we are performing routine checks with the limited resources that we are having. The second option is to increase our resources. We realize that we will not be able to ever have sufficient human resources to deal with the queues at the border effectively. We have to work smarter. We cannot do that by just employing more people. Our third option is the one that we are presenting, is to stop the routine commuters and monitor their compliance. So the checks that we to go on to the second question directly from here, the checks that we need to build into that third option would be, as we said, more focus on inspectorate. We are planning to deploy law enforcement officers from the Department of Home Affairs to our ports of entry. Currently, that is not part of our port of entry component. They would not be seated behind desks like our immigration officers are, but they would be the eyes and the ears of our department doing the monitoring, as was indicated by the member, that which is so badly needed. Then further, in order to make sure that this system of automated checks is not abused. What we are planning to do is to do an enrollment of individuals to make sure that when we enroll an individual for automated checks, that person is not unwanted or undesirable, wanted or undesirable, and should be excluded from this agreement. So there would be a formal enrollment process. We would check documents. We would check that the person is entitled to those documents before enrolling them. And only those who are enrolled would qualify to move through the automated checks. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Isaac? Yes, ma'am.
There's a question which I want to be clear of. You know, according to the workers when coming to South Africa from other countries, they follow the labor laws laid down by our country, South Africa. So when they enter the country, they are first expected to sign an agreement. And they are required again to report at the immigration office for examination, medical examination. But now, from what you are hearing here, the agreement is quiet about that. What are they intending to do about that?
Before you answer, I think we are also concerned about the porosity of the borders. You have said that this system will encourage people who scale the borders to now come back to, you know, to the 14 borders. But you see, it's not only, it's true that there are some of the people who do have documents who scale the borders because of the long queue. But there are other people who are not scaling the borders because of long queues, but because they are doing it illegally. I have not heard anything indicated as to what it is that you want to do to address those that are being illegal. You see, this one facilitates people who are legal documents, but those that are being illegal, what is it that we want to do to tighten our borders? Because the problem also is that our borders, not only with the Sotho, but with all other countries, our borders are too porous. In fact, they are like a seat. Anybody wants to come in, walks in straight like that. There's no, nothing is it. That's the problem. You see, what is it that you want to do as a country to try to address that? Now, you are saying, which is correct, I think they sort of want to help by America, Britain, to come up with watertight type of documents, which are not easily afforded. But our documents here, our documents, anybody get it anytime. Anybody get it? They are sold like fat cake in Hillbrow, anywhere. They are sold like fat cake. Our documents. You see, what is it that you want to do to make our own documents in this country not to be so easily available to anybody who wants them? Because it is only yesterday someone was telling me, "Can you get me a passport?" You know, no, don't give me a get your passport. I'm police person. I'll arrest you. Just know up on your line. But other people, the only thing that they are expensive. You think that you cheat the rest, you know? Some of these programs. Now, will you have a trial period, for instance, to see if this system is actually working before it can actually get full scale implementation? A trial period, for instance, so that we're able to. Because if there are problems, we come back to if there are some, you know, loopholes, we come back to close them. And so I'm going to full scale go into this thing here. We know that you're close. Those are, I think, the last questions. You have over asked the questions. I have not seen you. Okay, fine.
Last one. Mr. President, you also provoke our brainwaves also when you ask your questions. But then, you know, it reminds me, I still wrote from you as a citizen. To what extent are they also going to work with the United Nations? Because it's the United Nations that take these people and passes them and dumps them in the streets of Johannesburg and leave them there at their own peril.
what is UN going to do to assist in this process? Of course, as South Africa, we are signatories to quite a lot of these agreements that make it easy for human rights, whatever, whatever, and we feel for them. But to what extent is this UN also taking responsibility in ensuring that it does not come and dumb people in our streets? I mean, I say Johannesburg, and it's so sad to see pregnant women, children, everything, you know, and they will tell you, no, we were put in a bus by UN and brought here. What is UN doing in assisting all these processes? Because here we have a problem, Jefferson. Here we have.
This is your last, I hope you will not have another, this is the last round of answers to your case.
Thank you, Chairperson. As far as the labourers are concerned, I think we've outlined in our presentation they would be required to report on first entry, where we would perform the checks that are required in terms of law. It's only the subsequent movements that we will not be capturing or examining them for. As far as the trial period is concerned, there would definitely be a trial period. I think no country would embark upon the system of e-borders without having proper tests in place, testing phase, as well as pilots. So that is for that reason that we have decided on piloting the system on the Lesotho border. So I think those were the two technical questions from my side.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on the issue of our porous borders, the responsibility for border control is a police responsibility. And it is done within the cluster, as I said, the BCOCC. And the police has set up a unit that deals with border control. How effective they are is questionable, as you have said yourself, Chairperson, that we still have porous borders at this point in time. But I know that according to the strategy, the border control strategy, that they have ways of, or they are in the process of tightening up on border control. So they would be better able to talk to the issue of our porous borders, Chairperson. With regard to the our documents, Chairperson, we've got our passport, Chairperson, is one of the most secure documents in the world. The issue, Chairperson, our passport, I'm going to say it again, is one of the most secure documents in the world. It has up to a level 7 security level, the passport. The issue, the thing with our passport is in the issuance of the document, Jefferson. It is the human element, not the passport itself. It's a very secure document, Jefferson. It is the issuance of the document. And I think, Chairperson, the Honourable Member alluded to some of the challenges that we have earlier on, if I may, Chairperson. You see, the Honourable Member had alluded to the issue of where they nearly legitimized an illegal person in South Africa by saying she has been in the country for some time and she is and she should be allowed to have South African citizenship. Now, with the late registration of births that we have had, Chairperson, we had people coming forward claiming that they are South Africans, and all they needed was someone that would give an affidavit saying this: I have known this person for so many years, is a South African, has been schooling here, some teachers, some principals, some priests have been giving these affidavits. And such people were then, based on that affidavit, given South African citizenship and were able to acquire South African documents. The other problem that we have, Chairperson, is the human element, where people come, bribe our officials and actually get these very secure documents issued in their names, so they acquire them fraudulently. And those are the challenges that we have at present, Chair. What we are in the process of doing is we are trying to to put into the issuance system, firstly to rework our processes, to see to it that one would not be able to, that you would minimize the human element in the issuing of a document. And that is part of the turnaround process that we are presently doing in the department, Chairperson.
Maybe there was some misunderstanding. We actually meant that these documents are readily available. You see, they are readily available anywhere to an attest. They are sold like hotcakes.
Yeah.
That does not suggest that the watermarks and everything are wrong. It only suggests that it is easy to get them due to this human element, due to corruption, which is amongst the public officials and some people also who may come from outside. That's the reason why today we've got to have some passports, visas to go into Britain. Precisely because they are so available to people who are not from South Africa. Anybody in Africa wants to go to Britain, comes first to South Africa, get a South African passport, then goes abroad. That is the reason why today the government says, oh, this is a problem here. Right? That's it. And we have been this turnaround strategy, it has been there, I don't know for how long. We have been turning the corner for the past 5 years. And we have really turned that corner. That's, I think, the frustration. And we have told even your HOD, that you have been taking too long to turn this corner, you seem not to be turning it. All the HODs that have come in that department have always been saying, we have got a turnaround strategy. But that turnaround strategy never materializes. All of them, three or four of them, I'm telling you, that has been the situation. Maybe we need to try something else. But the turnaround strategy, once Home Affairs talks turnaround strategy, we become suspicious and jittery. That there is something which is not going to materialize again. That's, I think, where the problem is. I want to remember, I think we are agreeing that the document itself, there's nothing wrong with it, actually, you know. The only thing is the problems that we know that are there in the department. That's, I think, the essence of what we are saying. We are saying, yes, it is important, the Sotho is surrounded by South Africa, we cannot frustrate people coming in and out legally. You can't frustrate them. You need to facilitate that movement, you know. It will help us also economically and the like. We have so many of them having participated in growing this very economy, in growing the South African economy. Our people have been cheated. It's not working the mind. But the Sotho people, Mozambican people, they have had to come in and work in the mines. They have helped us. We are where we are because of some of these people. And therefore, today we can't say they should not come to South Africa. But we are saying it must be done legally, properly. Now, our concern is that will you be able to do it properly? But this document, I'm not sure. I don't think all our members are saying we are against this document. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. You see? I want, therefore, to suggest and ask all our members that we adopt this document, but maybe in the next incoming parliament, the committee that will come, must actually be trying to monitor as to whether all these concerns that we have raised here have been addressed by the Department of Home Affairs, and be able to monitor as to whether this document is actually achieving that which is supposed to achieve. I think that should actually be our attitude here. Rather than to say we don't want the agreement, you know, we have got to pass the agreement. I don't think we've got any choice, really, honestly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, Chairperson.
We do have a question.
Yeah.
We do have a question.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. International agreements, Parliament can either accept or reject. It's within the domain and the prerogative of the executive to negotiate them. And Parliament can only accept or reject it. They cannot make, suggest amendments, etc. So that's only two options that you have. However, you can, although they have no legal effect, when you report to the House, you can report your concerns. And this can be conveyed to the executive, but they have no legal standing.
Thank you. I think you have assisted that. That yes, because this agreement will be placed before the House on Thursday. We'll talk about that, but it will be placed before the House on Thursday. But my suggestion as a chair of this committee is that we should not reject it. I think we will give it to you there. And I think we are saying that government, yes, was the right to, it was done in good faith.
to try to help us all. Let us accept it, and then later on we can deal with the consent. That's my suggestion, Honorable Member. And when you're quiet, I think you are agreeing.
What makes me to be worried, Jefferson, is that I think the department must actually be able to give us proof that this is what it is going to do. Then we are sure that whatever we are ratifying here, we are agreeing to something that will be implemented. We can't just give the department a plain check. They say themselves they are understaffed, they are underfunded. So it's just that it's very few instances where we get to interact with the department, because I think these are some of the things that we need to raise, including the issue of finances and whatever. Luckily, we passed that bill in Parliament that allows us to also amend the budgets of the department. I think we can actually be able to utilize that to assist the Department of Home Affairs to get more resources. But our worry is that we'll ratify this, Jefferson, and then the department is having problems of implementation, Jefferson, because they don't have money. And then we'll look like Popeyes when things don't get implemented. Rightly so, Jefferson, you say the new incoming committee, officials will still be there in the department. The new incoming committee, it needs to make a follow-up on some of these issues. But department officials, ba shaya shaya, and say things are in place, when in actual fact, they are not necessarily in place. That is our main worry. That is why we're keeping quiet. We're trying to think what should we do, Jefferson.
I hear what you are saying, but this you see, the department can't bring something, because actually it is the department that brought this document here. It cannot bring something to us which it does not think is in the interest of the country. I really think that they are bringing it here because they think that it will help us also as a country. It will also help the people of Lesotho. And I think the bottom line is that all of us want to see easy movement between South Africans and Lesotho International in South Africa and in Lesotho. Now, this document is about that. Now, all other problems that we have raised, I have raised them as well. I am saying those are processes. Those are implementation problems that might be there. And I'm saying, therefore, that let the other committee that is coming be in a position to get help from people like Mukesh and them to be able to check if ever what the department tells them is correct in terms of implementation. To be able to go to those borders themselves and be able to check as to whether these things that they have told us here are actually working as they are supposed to work. I think that committee will have the power to do that. And if they do not have, should I say, capacity enough, they've got the right to buy capacity elsewhere or to acquire capacity elsewhere to help them so that they are able to check if things are done and done correctly in this situation. Really, I want to appeal. I hear what you're saying, Honorable Magbu, but I want to appeal really that let us pass this. And unfortunately, if we're still there as a committee, we would commit ourselves to say we will see to it that it is that these things that we are raising are actually corrected and it is done properly. But some of you guys will be there. And some of you guys will be there, and I'm sure you'll be able to follow this matter up.
Yeah.
I'm suggesting that we pass this. I've been listening to only Faith, and I'm not sure if she's speaking for everybody.
No, I'm not.
I don't want them to vote on this matter. Really. I don't want to put it to vote. Can we reach some consensus? Looks like there is some sufficient consensus. Can we go on?
Yeah.
Yeah. There is some sufficient concern. Can I read the report of the committee? Okay. Because there is some concern. Because there is sufficient concern. The Select Committee on Social Services, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the agreement between the Government of the Republic of Africa and the Government of the Kingdom of Lesotho on the facilitation of cross-border movement of citizens of the Republic of Africa and the Kingdom of Lesotho, referred to it, recommends that the Council, in terms of Section 23, I mean, Section 231, 2, or Section 2 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. Agreed to?
Agreed.
Thank you.
I just wanted to be medical. And I heard what you said, that this did not go to national. And from the DA side, I never had any opportunity even to speak to any of our spokesperson on this matter. You heard what I disagree on. And I really disagree on these issues, because at present, and I know that border control is not only the issue for Home Affairs, even our police service is trying to say. And I cannot see, and it is not that I do not want other people to cross our borders. They are coming in any case, they're coming out into our country without even crossing our borders. I want you to know that I do not have a clear mandate on this from the DA side to agree with it. It was my view that I opted, which I was entitled to, but I do not.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time, your presentation. You will provide, what we will have to the house on the thank you very much. I want to declare 5 minutes break for the
comfort place.
Comfort break.
Social services. Okay, here we are today to finalize this whole question of regulation. And yes, we have had a meeting somewhere in November where we dealt with the regulation. I'm getting a feeling that we have not really done justice to it, because the procedure that we follow were not really proper, in the sense that, I mean, we were to look at the regulations that have got conflict, the national regulations, but specifically those that are in conflict with the provincial regulations. Now, I'm made to understand that there are, I mean, three areas where the regulations that we have here are in conflict with regulations of three provinces. Now, maybe what you need to do is to recapture on those. To recapture on those and say what you want to say in relation to that. And before we actually proceed, because I would want this fragment to come in and recapture those, this procedure that I'm suggesting, I just want to find out if I'm correct. Mukesh, can you help us? Help us.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, I agree with you in terms of Section 3.2 of the Act, that the minister must submit all regulations made in terms of that, and which affect the province. Now, in terms of let me just outline what happened. That the minister submitted the regulation sometime last year in November, but just the regulations were given to us. And then at some point the chair wrote to the minister to ask which regulations are in conflict. And then the minister said these regulations, this regulation H is in conflict. But how to manage that is that it must be in accordance with Section 146 of the Constitution. And section 146 of the Constitution says that the law would apply if it's a matter which is listed in Schedule 4, which it is, and that, for instance, that the national legislation would prevail over the provincial legislation if the national legislation applies uniformly with regard to the country as a whole, and inter alia the national legislation deals with matters that cannot be regulated effectively by legislation enacted by the various provinces individually, or, for example, that the national legislation deals with a matter which to be dealt with effectively requires uniformity across the nation, such as establishing norms and standards, frameworks, and national policies. And I think that maybe it's a good idea to outline the process, because we were given this, all these documents which are not really necessary for the members to look at. But perhaps if you want to look at the process, perhaps the minister should have written to say, these are the regulations, this is the regulation that is in conflict, and in terms of section 146, it either creates national norms and standards, etc., because then the process would have been a lot shorter.
Thank you. I think what we then should do is to allow the department to actually lift up those regulations that are in conflict with some provincial regulations and tell us that this is a regulation and this is what province X regulation is, for instance, you know, and we would contrast and see. And of course, I mean, in the back of our mind, we must bear in mind that national regulations supersede the provincial ones. If what?
If in terms of section 146, they check national norms, etc., as I just said.
Yes, that's correct. Can we then ask the department to take us through those regulations? Not all the regulations, not this big virus, bigger than the virus, but only those, you know, let's lift up, just those. Only one. Yes, please. Department?
Thank you, Jay. On the 21st of November, Mr. Sila wrote to the minister and asked him whether there's any conflict between the regulations and provincial legislation. And the line function and legal services section of the department then started looking at provincial legislation, and we found the following. But let's go back to what the Act says. Section 12(9)(a) of the Children's Act 2005 provides that circumcision of male children older than 16 and younger than 18 may only be performed if the child has given consent to the circumcision in the prescribed manner. Now, in the prescribed manner, it's prescribed by regulation. Now, Regulation 8 of the draft regulations subsequently provides that consent by a male child older than 16 years and younger than 18 years to circumcision must be in a form substantially corresponding with Form 3 in the draft, the forms to the draft regulations. Now, we found that laws in three provinces are in conflict with the Section 12(9) of the Act and Regulation 8 of the draft regulations. Now, the application of health standards in Traditional Circumcision Act of the Eastern Cape provides in Section 7(1) that the parent or guardian of a prospective initiate must sign a consent form if the prospective initiate is younger than 21 and older than 16, and Annexure A of that Act also requires proof that the prospective initiate is at least 18 years old, or if the parents of the prospective initiate request the circumcision, the child must be at least 16 years old. So it's clearly in conflict with the Children's Act and regulations, the draft regulations. The Free State Initiation School Health Act of 2004 provides that the minimum required age for an initiate to be accepted at an initiation school is 16, and that the parent of a prospective initiate below the age of 18 must complete and sign the consent to be initiated. So it's also in conflict with the Act, where the Act says the child himself must consent. Then the last one is the regulations made under the Northern Province Circumcision School Act of 1996 provides that no person below the age of 12 can be admitted to an initiation school, and that a person below the age of 21 can only be admitted. So between the age of 12 and 21, you can only be admitted with the prior consent of the parent or guardian. So the child himself has no say in the matter. And that's basically what it's about.
Thank you. So, I don't know if you've seen where the conflict is. Yeah? All of them relate to the age of consent.
Yes.
And the national one says the age of 16. That's the national one.
Yeah.
We want to know if this national determination, you see, because we have said that the national determination takes precedence if it is actually meant to give them, as Mukesh puts it, national law,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
In this case, are we then agreeing that the national regulation is actually trying to give a norm nationally for the whole country? Do we agree that that is the situation or not? Okay, sure.
Perhaps the person can motivate why they speak of that section. In terms of Section 146, does it create a national norms and standards? Or do they believe that provinces, these are the criteria that are in Section 146, that provinces individually cannot deal with it. So perhaps if we hear from them first, and the deceased members agree, because we need to do it in accordance with Section 146.
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to read the whole of Section 146 now, but it's clear that in 146.2b provides that national legislation that applies uniformly with regard to the country as a whole prevails over provincial legislation if any of the following conditions is met. And then the B paragraph says that the national legislation deals with a matter that, to be dealt with effectively, requires uniformity across the nation, and the national legislation provides that uniformity by establishing norms and standards, frameworks, or national policies. And there's a couple of other things. Section 146 is it's a very long section. Also in 146.6, it says that a law made in terms of an act of parliament or a provincial act can prevail only if that law has been approved by the National Council of Provinces. So the Children's Act was approved by the National Council of Provinces.
Thank you. It seems to me that there's some argument that this national regulation does seek to give national norms and standards into the provinces. So it then would go without saying that in this situation, the national regulations would prevail over those of the province. That's my reading of the situation. Again, am I right?
Yes, Chair, there's just a clarification, 146.6, though. It says that in terms of a law made in terms of an act of parliament, it's referring to delegated legislation. So it's just not to confuse that with the fact that the children's bill was passed by the NCOP. It's a law made in terms of national legislation, which means in effect the regulation.
And this law is made in terms of that thing, isn't it?
No, Chair. The regulations are part of the Act, so that's regarded as a law. If you read the proper wording, if you read the wording carefully of 146.6, it's not the fact that the children's bill was passed by the NCOP, but it says that delegated legislation can only prevail over provincial legislation. also the NCOP.
So what do you suggest?
No, I agree that I agree with the department that these are the criteria, and you can even argue in terms of section 146(2)(a) that national legislation, that it can't be regulated effectively by the provinces individually because they have all these different standards. So there's enough motivation for that. It's just that in terms of when you report to the House, you have to say in terms of section 146, these are the reasons that the committee felt, or the committee feels that the House should adopt regulation.
Thank you. Are we moving on the same wavelength? I don't remember. I understand nowadays. But let me hear what you want to say.
If the guest can clarify, you see, English to us is a second language. My mother tongue is Zulu. So if you can clarify, what's this delegated... So I'm saying he must simplify. Don't just mention this big English and say delegated S. He must simplify so that then a lay person like me will understand what he means. So if that can be clarified, yes.
But then some of us went to school and the first one was all.
Yes, we send our books.
Me too, Chair. In fact, I missed most school and most members here. it's just that the fact that the act, delegated legislation, is where the minister can make regulation. The power to legislate has been delegated to the minister, because Parliament can't deal with these quite administrative issues, like as in what's contained in Form 3, etc., etc. So Parliament has delegated their power of lawmaking to the minister, but Parliament wants to make sure that they still have oversight over that. So that is just what's delegated in the context.
Thank you.
They're made by the minister.
Any other? Comments, questions from honourable members?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have a question.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm growing old or what, but I can't remember that we had a workshop on this, on the regulations. I simply can't remember. Even if we had, I'm still confused about so many issues, especially with this document and as thick as the one in front of me. Long before my time, before I came to Parliament, they were already busy on the Children's Act. And it took us nearly 10 years, plus if not longer, to get to the Act, to get the Act to be signed into law, the bill to be signed into an Act. I cannot understand why we are in such a hurry to really get the regulations through. If I can just quote here stats that I received from UNICEF on child abuse, and it's even more now because this was done in 2005-2006. Sexually abused, physically abused children, 55, nearly 56,000 per year. Children awaiting trial, 1,100. Approximate number of rapes reported annually in South Africa, 52,600. Approximate number of rapes committed against children, 27,000. These are scaring figures, and it speaks of a lack of capacity to implement. If this department today can tell me that they do have, or that they will have within the next coming year, the capacity to implement regulations, I will be very pleased that I will agree. But if they cannot, and we all know that we have a tremendous problem with social workers, auxiliary social workers, and those are the people that need to implement. If they can assure me that we will be up to standard on capacity, sure, then I can agree, but otherwise, truly, I cannot. And then I also want to hear from the department, because I'm honest, I did not work through this whole document. Did we allow, did the Department of Justice allow for child-friendly rooms at court where children can be kept and do their statements or what? I would like to know if they budgeted for that, the Department of Justice, or is it in the pipeline or what? Thank you.
I hear your concerns, but I think your concerns are a little misplaced. But those concerns are genuine concerns. I agree with you. But this is the reason why we've had to pass the Children's Act, to be able to address some of those concerns. Now, this big thing of regulation, so regulation is basically most, under normal circumstances, they don't even come to Parliament. They don't even come to Parliament. But this one, specifically, have had only that section, because there is a conflict between the national and the provincial one. And if there's a conflict between national and provincial one, then it is where we've got to come in as NCOP to pass those regulations if we think they are indeed going to give, you know, national norms and standards. And indeed we think they will have to prevail over those provincial ones where there is a conflict. We're not supposed to look at this whole document, you know? We're not supposed to. It's a regulation that gives the whole thing. It's a departmental letter. Ours is to know them so that we are able to monitor. But that which has come to us now, it is only that section that deals with where there's a conflict between the provincial and the national law or the regulation. I think this is just the only thing, Honorable Lamuna. But your concerns, it's true, they are real concerns, real problems that are there in the life. But if you don't have regulations and you pass the law and the regulations are not, are implemented, it means this law will not be implemented. And we're not going to wait until we are saying now that the department has got capacity. Then we can now pass the law or pass the regulations. We pass them, you know, and say to them, you must work in accordance with this. We monitor them. We see to it that they work in accordance with this regulation. But if you don't pass them, how do you monitor them? You will not be able to monitor them. That's the problem. Mukesh wants to help.
Just to clarify that the content is only on the age for circumcision and consent. It's just confined to Regulation 8, which deals with the age of consent for
initiates. That is the only thing that is in front of the committee. And the only thing, the whole question of the age, you know, of consent. Of circumcision,
maybe
children,
doesn't
it? Yes, ma'am.
Maybe I take note of your concern, but you know what? With the development of the legislation, we can't implement the act if we don't get approval for the regulation. We've got processes in the department. The implementation plan is finished. The monitoring and evaluation tools is nearly finished. The national policy framework is in a process to be finalized. We've got training guidelines, 3 modules. We've already finalized 1 module. We're busy with the second one. And the third one, it will be finished by the end of the year. And we've got practice guidelines that we start now with norms and standards. So it's really very important for us to start implementing the legislation. Justice has got a problem. We are arranging a meeting between the ministers now about the budget and the staff, but in social work, I hear the numbers that you say, but in social work, we are already implementing most of the legislation because a lot of the issues are already in the existing Child Care Act. I mean, we've got children's courts, the children's courts are running, we've got foster care, we've got adoption. We're doing at the moment inter-country adoptions without legislation, we use the Hague Convention for that. We deal with trafficked children, we deal with abduction. So most of the issues in the legislation, the social workers are already dealing with it, although we all need staff and trained staff. And this is why the department took this route of the implementation of documentation, so that if we have the documentation that we can immediately start with capacity building, we are doing capacity building and briefing sessions already. But I think I agree with the Honourable Chairperson that if we don't implement the legislation, when are we going to do it? When will we ever have the staff? The department, you know, I think they briefed the committee on bursaries for students, they've got the retention strategy, they're looking at the salary of the social workers in government as well as in the NGOs. So it's really very important in the interest of the children, to protect the children, even to protect them more, the existing act is doing at the moment to really approve the regulation so that we can start with the implementation. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. I think we are moving on the same wavelength. We are all cruising on the same wavelength now. My only little question is, I just want to find out whether, because this has got to be passed by the National Council of Provinces, whether this is, does not have to go to the province. You know, I just want some clarity there. Yes, ma'am.
Chair, I may not answer your question, but I actually have a supplementary question to that. In terms of processes and perhaps the legal table on the NCOP side can advise us. Should the NCOP pass or approve the principle of these regulations by means of a resolution through the committee or a committee report or whatever? My question is, who will instruct the provincial legislature to bring these three provinces that are affected? Is it a process that is managed from the NCOP chairperson to the provincial speakers? And do you give the provincial legislatures a time frame and say to them, you've got a year to bring your provincial legislation in line, these are the national norms and standards? I just wanted clarity on that process because there's a second tier of governance. So in order for us to make Section 146 work and implement that national legislation prevails, I just need to understand how would the NCOP take it forward.
Unfortunately, state law advisors are not here, you know? And I must place the record that they were invited to come to this meeting. They are not here. We don't know why. Maybe we need to know that later. But Mukesh can help us. Mukesh?
Perhaps when it comes to regulations that will supersede provincial legislation, the minister should determine whether there needs to be that gap in there or not. Because in terms of how this would work, once the NCOP approves it and the regulations are approved, that becomes the law. So if any of the provinces initiate, or you know, it becomes a crime actually then to initiate somebody under the age. So that's a consideration that we don't have any control over. Once Parliament approves that and the regulations are approved, that in fact is the law, which means that they'll have to comply with Section 12.9, then together with regulations.
I think the question is, who is to sensitize the provinces? There are three provinces
mm-hmm.
here
yeah.
whose regulations or laws are in conflict with these regulations.
Yeah.
Is it the Department of Social Services who will be able to say to those provinces, look, the NCOP has passed a resolution to
yeah.
Has approved these regulations. And therefore, your piece of legislation is in conflict. Bring it, to line or in line. Is it the National Department of Social Services? Is it the NGOP that does that? I think, although it's not our baby here, our baby is to agree or not agree, and then whatever happens thereafter, it will be between the department and, the powers that be in the NGOP.
And we are sure there is movement where the minister and the MECs sit together. I'm sure after we've passed this, the department will note that the NCOP has passed this thing, so it means it needs to go to MINMEC. And the minister will engage the provincial MECs to actually make that law, meaning it needs to be amended in their legislature so that it's on par with
I'm covered because normally, if you just look at the separate functions of Parliament passes the law, government implements the law.
It's what we are agreeing. Okay, honourable members,
just to come back to your earlier question. Whether it should be approved in the House or in the committee. Do you take these the approval of the conflict regulations, do you take it to the House or
I don't see any dissenting view that these regulations are proper, then we can actually approve them because they are giving us a national standard, London standard. We agree. Do we approve of them, therefore? And if we do, then we'll do it formally. Then there's a report here, the committee. Now, the Select Committee on Social Services, having considered the request for approval by the Council of the by the Council on the regulations made in terms of Children's Act 2005, Act number 38, 2005, respect to it, recommends that the Council, in terms of Section 3.3 of the Act, approve or read Section 3.2b of the Act, approve the regulations. You agree? In other words, this simply says we are approving those regulations, the national regulations, which is in conflict with the provincial one. Now the national one becomes a national law.
Yes.
Do you agree? Are we agree?
Okay.
Good. No dissenting view. All parties agree. Thank you. We step off this. Okay, Kesh?
I don't know if, would the department agree that we can follow this process next time? Then we can just have one meeting, because I think we've had three meetings on this now. And this issue is dragged on because first the justices' regulations went there, etc. Because it was just a matter of regulation 8, which the committee could have disposed of, and you could have started implementing quite a while ago. So perhaps because there's going to be some gap, because maybe new members will come, so it might facilitate the speedy passing of this in the future.
Now, the future proposal is a research type of a thing. I think let's just highlight those regulations that are in conflict. Just pick those up. Discuss those and finish, rather than doing the whole thing here. That's what you're saying. Okay. Now, honourable members, I think we have come to the end of this meeting. Thank you very much. But I must say to you, on the department, thank you very much also for having brought these things here, and we hope now that this has been passed, and we hope to be in the SOP very soon to be in a position to do your work as expected. Now, our previous item that was on the agenda, all of them, we are through with the Department of Social Services. We need to do a statement on Thursday on the agreement between the Republic of South Africa and Lesotho, Kingdom of Lesotho. Can anybody volunteer to make a statement in the House? If there is no volunteer, I'll make you volunteer. anybody want to make a statement? Anybody?
No, I won't
do that. That's a volunteer. Thank you, Comrade Maggie, for volunteering. Thanks very much. And then, you say there are minutes. And then there are two sets of minutes that are supposed to be done. Where are they?
What about the regulations?
No, but is it on the agenda?
It's
on the agenda of the sitting, or in case this matter is put on the agenda for Thursday, we need to be ready also with a statement for this. Any suggestion? Anybody?
We'll be in the NA next time.
I'll be leaving the country.
Honorable Lamula, can you help us? The statement.
I'm not sure if I'll be here, because I'm honest.
Honorable Khalil, can you help us?
Why are you on it?
Yeah?
I don't think I'll be able to be there.
Khalil?
I don't think I'll be able to do that.
Made a speech.
Okay, you want to make it easy for you?
I'm not for that.
The Mugesh can help you, because I'm very sure Not a long thing.
Short.
Okay.
Thank
you very much. Thank you very much. Now, I think we have come to the end of the meeting. But before we do that, let me ask the minute.
Why don't I have any
minutes? Department may, I mean, you are at liberty to leave if you want to. We are done with you. Guys, we're also
okay.
We are dealing with in-house matters.
Is it the summer? Only what I think is
no money,
ik was hier green.
The minute we are here now on the news of the 22nd of
October.
We'll
keep in touch.
We'll keep in touch.
Okay.
Give me one, my friend.
I've
been wondering why did you get it.
We can't hear.
I think we are on the minute. Page 2. Time. The news of the 11th November, page 1. Page 2. Agreed. We have now come to the end of our meeting, but before that, I really want to thank you heartily, honorable members, for having worked together for the past 5 years. You were wonderful members who have made it very easy for both the chairpersons of the cluster to work and work properly. If it were not for you, we would not have done all the work that we did. We also want to thank the researchers, the secretaries who have helped us, and we say keep on with the good work. Some of us will not be coming back to Parliament. It is my last chairing of a meeting of Parliament. As you see me seated here today, I may not chair another meeting of Committee of Parliament for the rest of my life. But I must say that I enjoyed working with you. It has been good. Lots of experience, gained lots and lots of things from all of you. And those of you who are coming back, we wish you well. And hope you will continue working in the manner in which we work. I'm speaking on behalf of myself and Honorable Masilo, who is also a chairperson of this cluster. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
The
ANC will call you to
farewell lunch.
No lunch. Why? You're playing you.